Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Great to have you along this afternoon. And I got to tell you, for a show that's doing a broadcast from a temporary studio, things are going very, very well. We are in a temporary studio right now with a $1 million view, by the way. I mean, it is gorgeous. We are looking at south of Market all the way down to AT&T Park. Across the water, you can see Oakland a little bit. It's beautiful, beautiful view. Very nice office. We're here for about a week and a half, which easily means 4 to 6 weeks.
That's what I was thinking.
Easily means 4 to 6 weeks, as we are getting an unbelievable brand new studio built for us here at 95.7 The Game. It is going to, there won't be a broadcaster in this town that doesn't have a serious case of studio envy.
Right.
Once they see what we're getting, it is going to be incredible. It is one of those things where, you know, I'll, like I've always said, just give me a microphone and get the hell out of my way. But a good studio can make a show better.
It really is.
We're so excited. It's like getting a brand new toy, except it's not a toy. It's your whole job. So I'm really looking forward to it. All kinds of new buttons and whistles and fun things, and ergonomic is very nice too. Very ergonomic, the new
very
thing.
Very cool.
Flushed, like sunken monitors all around. I mean, it is going
wow.
to just be, we'll give everyone a tour at some point here using Facebook or Snapchat or something. We're very, very excited about it.
It's our office. You know, that's people have a desk, a traditional desk and a chair and a computer and a window. We have a studio. That's literally our office. So this is very exciting.
It's the Don Collins legacy project. This is his AT&T Park. If you build it, they'll broadcast from it. So we're very, very excited. I know I'm excited. And it's one of those things, you know, I really did. I told the fiance, I do not want to see your wedding dress until that moment.
Of course
I really,
not.
I'm old fashioned like that. I don't want to see the studio until
really?
It's ready to go. I think I'm going to avoid the corner. I'm not going to look at any of the progress. I'm not going to watch any construction. I'm just going to wait until the full metamorphosis is beyond the chrysalis stage. Like, I want to see. I am not interested in the caterpillar. Show me the butterfly.
I will watch it every step of the way.
Well, yeah.
I did that with my renovation. You know, I wanted to see everything.
You got to stay on
them. So I
want to
see everything with this. Yeah.
Did you ever tell one of the contractors, like, I do your commercials? That angle better be perfect.
They're doing a great job. I can't say nothing bad about Dolan's. They've been wonderful.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been good.
Parquet floors everywhere now.
We're not to that stage yet, but we're getting there. We're ordering doors literally tomorrow. Doors. This is huge, Damon. This is huge for me.
You're not ordering any lumber?
No, I don't need lumber. We're past the lumber stage. We went to windows. Now we're doors. Then it's flooring.
Oh, that's right. It's windows and doors, not doors and lumber.
Yeah.
Is that someone else?
They do lumber too, but windows and doors.
Nice.
Anyway, so a lot of renovation happening in my world. I'm kind of excited. Can't wait to see the new studio and my new house someday.
Right? Yeah.
It's all going to.
What a month you might have.
I know. Woo.
New everything. Woo. New everything. So we are sitting here. Around what I would call a six-person round, if I could use restaurant terms. This
okay.
is a six-person round. We don't sit across from each
I
other
know,
like
it's
this.
Weird.
It's a little like we're on a date. Just a little bit. It's
I
really
wasn't
weird.
Thinking that, but.
Well, we're sitting like far away enough from each other where it's still early in the relay. We're feeling each
could
other out.
Could you pass the salt, please? Could you pass the Twitter, please?
You know, it's funny. You know, I work with you every day, and almost every day anyways. And I've always said, if I walked out not offending you, Well, then I hope no one else is really offended. You know, I mean, because you, I mean, look, you're a good-hearted person.
I try.
You're a caring mother. You're a lot more conscientious about things than I'll ever be. You care about, what do you care about that I don't care about? Other people. I mean, it's really, it's beautiful. And I've always thought, you know, like if Gianna's willing to put up with me, many of you should be at least willing to try that too, right?
Sure. Can I try everything?
Can I do? Thank you. Can I share with you a message from the kind of listener I don't even really want in my audience?
Okay.
I'm not here to drive away listeners. As a matter of fact, I'm actually paid to make sure more. But every now and then, I just have to be honest with myself. And I've said it. Look, this is a selfish act. I hope you like it too. It's that simple.
Okay.
It's that simple. Would you like to be a blockbuster? Not if I can be the coolest little art house movie in the world too. Like I'd rather be The Usual Suspects than The Phantom Menace.
I'm with you on that one.
Okay. I'll save this guy an actual name call out. But I got a message on Facebook who friended me to tell me this. Some guy friended me to let me know why he's not listening to the show anymore. And I thought, all right, well, he really wrote something long. It's got to be compelling. It's got to be a good reason. I clearly stepped on his family's toes or something. What happened? Dear Damon, I've enjoyed your take on sports for years. Haven't always agreed with you, but I've always been entertained. You call it like you see it. You often call others seeing it, but they aren't willing up to speak so whatnot. He was a big fan. He listened all the time.
Liked your honesty.
He liked
it
all. Liked it all and was willing to take some good with the bad. But then I crossed the line, Gianna. A couple of weeks ago, when you were explaining to Gianna why you didn't like the band Train, you said that it was because you didn't like Train, and your excuse was that you were a heterosexual male, which was a punchline. It was a joke. Like,
right.
Why don't you like Train? Well, because I'm a straight male. That's why I don't like Train. I am not a 15-year-old teeny bopper girl waiting for the guy with the cute hair to call her at night. Like, Train is chick rock.
It's pop music. It's more
pop music, yeah. Chick rock, talking about how, you know, angels and soy lattes and just like stuff that, you know, you're singing to girls if you're singing about angels and soy lattes. You're not singing to men, right? Am I wrong?
No.
Okay.
It's not necessarily
so I
a guy's band.
Deeply offended you.
No.
Well, let's get back to No. Don't even.
It's totally okay.
God. Damon, it wasn't so much the content of your statement, although I don't know how accurate your assessment of Train's fan base demographics are. It was the way you said it. Your voice seemed to be full of contempt. Yeah, I have contempt for Train. I have contempt for a band and this guy who ruins like every national anthem that he sings. Train is available for bar mitzvahs.
And that's it?
You may not have intended to communicate it this way, but it's how I heard it. It was almost like you think that women are contemptible, like only someone stupid and shallow like a woman would like Train. No, I was just saying how if you're a man with, you know, real taste in music, you probably don't like Train.
Now, hold on. I have real taste in music.
If I could offer you Curtis Mayfield or this and you choose this, we're done.
I think there's different perspectives anyway. You're allowed to not like a band, Damon. It's okay.
Damon, in your enthusiasm to disparage the band, you came across as disparaging to women. Ouch. Join the frickin' club, buddy. I found it significantly obnoxious. I've turned you off, and I've not turned you back on since. After all the many hours of great listening to you, as I've driven around for my job all day, I felt it was only fair to let you know why you've lost one fan. Thanks very much. Sincerely. And he signed it. I wrote him back. Dear Wuss, it's chick rock. End of the story. 15-year-old high school girls like Train. Grow up. Stop being a wuss. One thing hits your ear out of my mouth and I'm totally cut off. You're soft. I don't need you in my audience. Bon voyage. You wuss.
You tell him, Damon. I don't mind Train. As a woman, I don't mind Train. And I think I have a very good, I have a great taste in music. I'm married to a musician.
You have a great taste in a lot of things. You're always smartly dressed. You always
Thank you.
Are. You have great taste.
And I don't think you have to, why does it have to be a woman? Why does it have to, I think you were joking because it's like.
I was joking.
It's pop music. It's like Vanessa Carlton. Do you like Vanessa Carlton, Damon? Probably not. She's probably not the first song on your iPad.
Making your way downtown, oh homeward bound, and I'm done. Look, if an NBA dream team can sing along to it, I bet you I can too.
But that's my point, though. It's not necessarily that it's chick. I mean, it's chick rock, sure. I'll give
it's
you that.
Total
it's like Cheryl Crow.
Yes.
Chick rock.
It's chick rock.
It's okay to be chick rock. They make money.
They have. Do you understand how much better Train lives than I ever will?
And you're okay with it?
I'm fine with that.
We're getting Vanessa Carlton.
If Train walked into my wedding and said, "We'd like to do a song for you and your bride right now," I'd say, "Get the hell out of here. We hired a DJ."
Would you really?
I don't want that. Sorry. You know, there's bands you don't like.
Yeah, that's all that is. That's all there is to it.
There's bands you don't like. Now, there's fans you don't like. I bet you Train has fans they can't stand. If you're the type of person who agrees, like, "I love this show," and then you get one episode you don't like, you're like, "I'm out of the show." How are you a grown man? How do you get to Friday from your Monday? How do you get to Friday if it happened on a Wednesday, could ruin Thursday?
It seems very minor, like a very small thing to be angry at.
If you were a big fan of the show and that was our breaking point, I can't believe that. Like, I should have driven you away years ago. I can't believe that. I should have seriously. You should have left a long time ago. Now, what's really funny? And this just shows you how, in the ear of the beholder, eye of the beholder, the whole world sits. Okay.
Right.
On the same day, I get that. I get this.
First of all, you check your work email. I'm impressed.
Does someone
check it for you?
It's like a weekly thing.
Okay.
I like to check emails on T days. I'm a Tuesday, Thursday email checker.
Got it. Okay.
So there's a guy who reached me on Twitter asking for my email address. And so I gave him the work address. And normally if somebody asks for that, they really want to tell you something.
Right.
All right. So I thought, all right, you know, hey, I'm here. He's like, "Damon, as I mentioned in my tweet," which was my second ever tweet, by the way, I'm new to Twitter, "I could not stand you. I would occasionally spin the dial. I would come across your show, and I just thought you were a blowhard that spewed meaningless hate all over the place. And when 95.7 was born," because he hates the Giants, he hates the other station, so he didn't want to listen to them just talk Giants Niners all the time. He was like, we needed 95.7 the game. "I needed it as a radio alternative for all of us East Bay fans. And then the big change came, the morning show and you take over afternoon drive. And I thought both moves were a huge mistake. And since I worked for," you know, he's in his car a long time. He listen. "You ripped Oakland. You ripped the fans. And we are thin-skinned, especially if the criticism comes from someone that used to work at that other place. However, deep down, I knew you were right. It was like bad-tasting medicine. As awful as it was going down, you know it's good for you. For the first few years of your show, I would turn off 957 The Game at 2:59 p.m. My favorite person who hates the show is the guy who hates the show who's never listened to it. I live for that. Tell me more about the book you haven't read, the movie you haven't seen. Please. It's amazing how often someone who tries the show out for one, not just like one segment. I could see how one segment might rub you the wrong way. But
sure.
If you stick around, you realize there's a little method to the madness here, and you'll eventually get it. I'm like a fungus. I'll grow on you. I'll wear on you. Well, just as I want to read this because it flies in the face of everything that I said about Train and the disparaging of the chick rock. "I would always turn off the show. However, there was an afternoon when I was driving in the Bay Area with my daughter Nicole for a golf tournament." By the way, she's got a full scholarship to Oregon State. Go Beavs. "We had your show on. You were taking calls and you undressed some idiot. Now, I'm not a huge fan of that style of radio, but my daughter was in stitches. And she said, 'Dad, sometimes an idiot needs to be sat down and punished.'"
I like his daughter.
So after her tournament, I returned home. I began listening to your show. As time and family commitments permitted, I slowly became a fan. And now he says that he actually is working somewhere where the show's not as easy to reach, and he misses us more than ever. And I told him about the app, and you can still listen to us any single time you want. And then he goes on to say he loves the Dave Forrest interviews. He said you're honest about all these trades and the way that you cover the A's on their flagship. I've never heard anything more honest. And that is from Steve in Rockland.
That's pretty cool.
So thank you, Steve, because when I checked my Facebook messages, I thought I was a woman beater. But when I checked my email, it turns out I'm appealing to college freshman golf team girls after all. So there you go. And I've always wanted to say, if this wonderful woman can sit across from me every day.
Every day.
There's got to be something that's not completely evil about me.
Someone's actually going to marry you. I'm just saying.
I don't know what she's getting in the deal.
You know what?
I know what I'm getting in the deal. I do not know what she's getting in the deal.
I know what she's going to do. She's getting a good guy. I'm going to say that because I'm your friend. But we are in the business of entertainment. Yes. Let's put it in perspective. It's entertainment.
That's it.
That's what we do.
How about that? Yep. It's entertainment. And like Jose Canseco, if I have to take 4 hydrocodones to make the show better, I'll do that. It's actually
Can
another
we
pain.
Do it's that
actually,
again.
This is a 0 milligram show.
God, come on.
This is a 0 milligram show. My back is feeling much, much better. I don't know what it is. Everything's kind of coming together. Everything's coming together. Maybe the back is healing, losing a little weight.
Hey.
Stop being such a fat ass, D. Bruce.
Isn't it horrible that I wish your back hurt just a little bit so you'd get back on the hydrocodone?
Is that
horrible?
Are you rooting for injury? For
no,
more codone shows? No.
Not at all.
I told my buddies, this is how honest my friends are. They're like, we were listening one day, and since we know you well enough, we know when you're a little goofy. And he's like, from now on, I'm not listening unless it's a 500 milligram show.
Thank you.
He's like, I like a 250 milligrams, not interested. 500, I'm tuning in. At 750, I'm calling friends. And at 1,000 milligrams, I'm downloading the podcast. So there you go. This is Jesse in Fremont. Jesse, how are you? What do you got this afternoon?
Good afternoon, Damon. It's my first time ever calling you. And when I first heard you back in when you first started, oh my God, I could not stand you. I was a diehard Raider fan, and all I heard from you was the honest truth, and I was like, okay, I cannot take this, and because the Raiders suck so bad. But over the years, I've learned to love you, so all I wanted to say was thank you, and get this off.
Hey,
I wanted to call you a long time ago, but I couldn't. So
Jesse.
I was like, my time.
Jesse, thank you very much. I do appreciate that. Look, when I came here, you want to know why I was hard on the Raiders? Because they sucked out loud and they were the worst run football team top to bottom in the NFL. And that's where they were. Where they are now is a much different place. Where they are now, here's the thing. How many people in the history of the station told you the Raiders were about to have a good year? I've never said that once until this year. So now it means something, right? I would hope that I've established a little trust with the audience where if I, you know, I've been wrong about things, but I don't hand out false praise. If I'm handing out praise, it's because I genuinely believe there's something praiseworthy that just happened or is about to happen. There are a lot of people who will pretend something's special when it's not. I cannot pretend that I enjoyed your food when I didn't. I cannot pretend that I liked this movie when I didn't. I am painfully honest, which is, again, another reason why my mom assumed I was going to die alone. But that's just who I mean, I was like that when I was 3. It's like, this isn't something that I don't put on my hat and come to work and now I'm in construction and when I take it off, I'm not, you know, like, I just don't like train all day long. It's not just for the show.
Is that ever hard to hear though, when someone tells you they don't like you or they hated you or.
My whole point is you had to listen to find that out and thank you.
Gotcha.
As long as you're in the audience. When the person who texts me every day to let me know how much they specifically hated that show with acute details of that show and what they hated about it, and the same person hates me Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, but they don't hate me on the day that I'm not broadcasting, but they're back the next Monday hating me, that's a W for the kid.
That is hashtag that's, winning.
That's a win. We got Jose in Fremont. What do you got, Jose?
What's cracking?
How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Hope you guys are doing well. Hey, I'm the guy that called you a hater back then, and you told me it was, you taught me, bro. You gave me some wisdom and taught me that that's a sorry excuse and not to use that word. And I appreciate that, man. And you were definitely keeping it real with us. We were delusional. Niner fans would always say we're delusional, but they're right there where we were at now. I got Niner fans betting me they go 8-8, and I'm taking those bets all day.
All day. But, all day. Under. Hey, under. Way under.
Hey, keep it up. Hey, you keep working on losing that weight. But I found out something today, man, that caffeine actually is a big contributor to lower back problems. I don't know if you knew that.
Is it really? And, well, the fact that I inject coffee directly into my lower back is probably a bad idea then. I mean, I drink way too much coffee.
I take a pre-workout that has like 3 cups of coffee in it, basically, man. So it makes a lot of sense. And I'm looking for the Raiders. I enjoy you. I enjoy your partner. And I love the music y'all play, especially Shorty the Pimp. If anybody were to tell me that you're actually a white guy, I would not believe it, bro.
Oh, well, I am your blue-eyed soul brother. Thank you very, very much. I do appreciate that. I tell you, I got that from my dad. My dad raised my little white ass on Motown and R&B. He was the only white guy in an all-black Vietnam platoon.
Was he really?
And his nickname in the platoon was the Blue-Eyed Soul Brother.
Wow.
So he would call me that as a little kid.
That's cool. That's cool.
And that's why I know Curtis Mayfield like a brother. Speaks directly to me. When we come on back, we got much more for you. We're going to take you down to Rio. We'd already talked to Ted Robinson in Rio, but we need to talk about the panic button that has always hit before the Olympics. And then when the Olympics are over, guess what? Very few times has that panic button ever really been used. Stick around. I love a world game. We're going to have one coming up soon. We're going to talk about that. And for you Raider fans, this is what I'm going to start next segment with. This is something from me to you Raider fans who have stuck with me through thick and thin. I am going to give you a talking point that you're going to want to start using right now for week numero uno in New Orleans. That's next on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
We've got Susan Slusser joining us at 6 o'clock. We're talking A's baseball with her, walking you right up to the A's dugout show, which begins with Chris Townsend at 6:15 tonight here on 95.7 The Game. We're going to get into some interesting Jed York sound. He was on the Rich Eisen show when we get to our next segment this hour. This segment, I'm going to get to the Olympics, but I want to start, like I said, with a promise. A little something for you Raider fans out there. As you get ready and excited for week one, it's really not that far away. It really isn't. By the way, bachelor party, week one in New Orleans.
Is that happening?
Maybe. Maybe.
Sweet.
Maybe. I'm going to need that Monday off.
Maybe Tuesday.
Maybe in the first 3 weeks of the year. So Drew Brees is entering the final season of his contract, right? He's carrying a $30 million cap hit, which, by the way, is the largest charge of any player to any cap since 2000. I mean, that's buku bucks. And there's very, very good chance that Drew Brees is either hitting the open market or, look, they can't franchise him because they'd owe him about $45 million, which you just can't do. So he's entering the season at age 37. Now, that's officially when you start wearing down. He's the only qualifying quarterback that's posted at least a 70 in total QBR in the last three seasons. He is more consistent than Tom Brady. Brees has thrown for 4,000 yards in an NFL record 10 straight seasons, which his entire career in New Orleans. He joined them in 2006. So the Raiders open the season in New Orleans. And Drew Brees, I mean, if that doesn't get your secondary's heart rate beating a little bit faster, I really don't know what should. Drew Brees is going to be testing this newly rebuilt Raiders secondary. But in terms of defensive efficiency, the Saints have been ranked 30th or worst in three of the last four seasons. And do you know what their solution to this was? Do you know who their new defensive coordinator is? Raiders fans, it's Dennis Allen. Week one in New Orleans against a Drew Brees offense and a Dennis Allen defense. He's got an awful lot of work to do to improve a Saints defense that allowed an NFL record 45 touchdowns last season. That is five more than the 1963 Denver Broncos allowed. I mean, and this has been a passing quarterback league for a really, 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 really long time now. And the Saints still gave up more passing touchdowns than anybody else. And their solution to the problem is Dennis Allen. If that doesn't get Jack Del Rio and this group fired up to go take on week one, if they weren't already, what more do you want? This is a franchise that, what, 2 years ago, its high water mark was Tony Sperano burying a football. That's how bad things were. What a difference. A couple of drafts, a couple of free agent classes, and a head coach who knows what he's doing make. What a difference it is now for the Raiders that were, the Raiders that are. I'm excited about this year. And I'll tell you, there are a lot of years where the Niners are the story and the Raiders are the other story. Those days are gone. The Raiders are the story now, and the 49ers are the other story in this market. That's the shift I think we're going to see happen here. Of course, over the next month, the Olympics are going to be a huge story. Every single night, you got a brand new something to go home and watch on NBC. Competition already began today, and Team USA won. I believe you said
yes.
It's already done.
Women's soccer.
Yeah, women's soccer has already beaten New Zealand. By the way, not a lot to really get excited about there. United States is 11-1-1 in the New Zealand series, outscoring them 47-5, which would be like outscoring a basketball team, 296-15.
Wow.
Carly Lloyd, Hope Solo, trying to join four others who have won three soccer gold medals.
Carly Lloyd with a goal today.
Did she?
Yep, and Alex Morgan.
Very nice. So competition is officially underway. Despite all the worries in recent months that construction was terrible, the people who are on the ground in Rio, and we talked to Ted Robinson earlier today, said that, you know, everything is basically more or less ready to go.
More or less.
Which isn't necessarily the all steam full ahead that you're hoping for the captain to shout out from the captain's chair, but okay, more or less ready to go sounds pretty much like how I've lived my life. You know, we're coming on the air about 15 minutes before every show. They're like, you ready? I'm like, yeah, more or less. We're
sure.
We're ready to go do a broadcast.
Well, they kind of have to be. There's nothing they can do about it. It's starting.
That's it.
Like, and here you go.
And here's the deal. No matter what you've heard, the Olympics always manage to pull themselves together in time.
Yeah.
They really do. No matter the logistical challenges, there have been few Olympic games that have been defined by the problems that surrounded the game. Now, you know, these problems have gone everywhere from, you know, steroids, doping, to straight up murder, you know, terrorist acts. We've seen that in the Olympics. There are always promises of more problems coming as the game draws near, but usually everything is okay. The Olympic Village has been a recent flashpoint, but guess what? Athletes are going to be fine, and they're going to be accommodated. Some lines haven't opened yet, and the schedule is only vaguely connected to reality, says one writer. But venues like beach volleyball on Copacabana, which was, you know, just hilariously, depressingly unfinished last month, look almost ready to welcome, as the story goes here, its scantily clad competitors. The Globe and the Mail's Cathell Kelly writes, you probably won't see a clockwork games. But continuing the slipshod tradition of Sochi, organizers will find a way to pull it off. There was no chaos at customs, no fistfights at the luggage carousel. The traffic is, as advertised, horrendous. But everything else has a temporary thrown-up look. And this is what Ted was saying.
Yeah.
What's the big difference between Brazil and Sochi and Beijing? Well, people walk around Brazil free. It's a democratic country. Entire neighborhoods were plowed, and, you know, like whether you got out of your bed or not, basically China said, okay, we're bulldozing this neighborhood. You have till 3 o'clock on Monday to leave. And if grandma's still in her bed at 3:01, she'll be part of the bird's nest. You can't do that in a democratic country. You have to do that in a totalitarian state. You have to do that in a way that, you know, welcome to Russia, welcome to China.
Yeah.
If you think you have freedoms, stick around for 5 minutes and find out how that goes for you. So there's a lot of talk about the security. Ann Killian even wrote about the Rio Games, saying that lines are getting longer and are giving a clear indication that Rio isn't necessarily prepared. She missed a news conference because the security lines are so long to get into the park. She says the final 20 minutes of your journey, the final 20 yards of your journey can take 20 minutes. All I can tell you is that Ann also covers the Niners, and it's the same thing at Levi Stadium. Everything's going all right, and then you're like 20 yards away, and it's another 20 minutes in your car. There's an awful lot of talk about the safety. Well, 47,000 police officers, 38,000 soldiers, 3,000 sailors guarding the ports and docks. It's double the deployment of the London Games 4 years ago, without a doubt making Rio the most militarized Olympics on record. Again, more than Sochi.
Right.
Like you said in your update, the torch is always... Yeah. Look, if San Francisco had hosted an Olympics, it would be the most held up by protest torch run of all time. So I give you all the wiggle room on that you could ever want. I'm not looking at you, Rio de Janeiro or Brazil, like you screwed that up. We are outrage du jour as a city. We will use your gathering for whatever to make our point on whatever. What I really thought was interesting as I was reading all of this preview, Olympic, get ready, start the hype machine stuff here, was this. And if you think about it for a little while, it might require this to really keep the Olympics healthy, thriving, and not doing as much damage as they do good to the countries that decide to host them. The ancient Greeks held the Olympics in the same wooden sanctuary on the Peloponnese for 1,000 years. No evident complaints. No one was like, we need to be someone new, somewhere brand new, new facilities every single year. Now, obviously, NBC hasn't spent $1 billion on the Peloponnesian Games. it wasn't a worldwide media event when the ancient Greeks were holding the Olympics buck naked, by the way, buck naked to enjoy the true physical specimen of the conditioned human body. In the Newark Times, a writer named Steve Pelotti wrote that a permanent home for the Games makes an awful lot of sense. There should be a permanent home of the Summer Olympics. There should be a permanent home of the Winter Olympics. And those should be the default Winter Olympic and Summer Olympic locations where you're not asking, does the world really need 9 more velodromes over the next nine Summer Olympics? We got more velodromes than we got bicycles. Do we really need another nationally recognized aquatic center everywhere we turn? Do we really need another opening ceremony, closing ceremony size track and field stadium? Like, why don't we build one and use that over and over? And of course, he says, well, this will never happen because...
How would you pick the location?
Number one, how would you pick the location? Yeah. Number two, you don't make money hand over fist.
Exactly.
Over and over and over again, people will become used to it. We should do something similar to the modern Olympics. Pick a country or a city to be the permanent host, one of each the summer and winter games. It makes sense, but the IOC is completely too greedy and corrupt ever to allow it. However, it does appear that the problems around Rio will spur them to make smarter choices about putting the games in better developed nations. The Olympics really did want to put the first ever Olympics in the Southern Hemisphere, in South America. The Olympics have never come to South America. This is the first time ever, and they wanted to give a new part of the world a chance to do this. And I think that after we just saw Rio de Janeiro host and Brazil host the World Cup, you thought to yourself, that is a pretty good, that's as good of a live scrimmage as you can have before you host an actual Olympics, right?
And it went okay.
It did go okay. How about this? Here's something that you don't hear very often, and I don't agree with this at all. I hate this kind of thinking. is it time to just turn the page? Guy writing for in Orlando named Brian Schmitz says, it's time to just let the games end. With apologies to every noble, hardworking athlete, from Michael Phelps to the unknown synchronized swimmer, do we really need the Olympics anymore? I'm as patriotic as the next guy or gal, but the Olympics just don't seem relevant. Thrill of competition and the triumph of the human spirit have long since been buried by corruption and scandal. Look, I'm about as cynical as they come. And that is even cynical for me.
Yeah, and it would just evolve into something else, the World Games, which we already have. So right. It's a great tradition. Maybe they could work it out where each continent has one location and they rotate it.
Continents.
Yeah, seven continents. Put one on each continent. And everyone gets a shot.
I'll take it down to six. Let's skip Antarctica.
I guess we're going to skip Antarctica. Okay,
I am going to give
we'll
you the. I am going to save you a full continent right here and now.
I didn't think that Antarctica went through. But Winter Olympics, I don't know.
You know, there was a little talk about having the Winter Olympics coming back to Squaw. Could it ever come back to Tahoe? And the answer is no, it couldn't.
It's just getting in and out.
Tahoe is a teeny tiny little town. They can't bring the Winter Olympics back to Tahoe any more than they could ever bring the Winter Olympics back to Lake Champlain in upstate New York. Champlain has a 7-Eleven, a Holiday Inn, an Olympic hockey rink, and that's it.
Yeah.
Jocelyn is in San Mateo. Jocelyn, how are you?
Good, Jacqueline. I think they should, like, the last four Olympic hosts, just keep those sites and rotate them through.
I've always wondered, like, what are you going to do with that velodrome when the Olympics are gone? I mean, it's not like you're going to now be the new home of that country's Olympic training center. Like, all of our Olympic training centers are in Colorado Springs, you know? I mean, I agree with you. I think they should pick a few places and rotate it in between until we, you know, see a different world economy or some country really does want to take on the burden of paying for all this, because it's not just built. Here's the thing. You build the venue, you light the streets, you make sure people can get from point A to point B, and that used to be what it took to host an Olympics.
Yeah.
Now it's security on a global army level. I mean, it's a different world that we live in. Jacqueline, thank you very much for the call. Sorry we got your name wrong there.
By the way, did you see that Team USA is not staying in the Olympic Village? They're actually staying on a luxury yacht.
Now, that's the dream team.
The dream team.
Team USA.
I'm sorry, the dream team, let's be specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
basketball team.
If you're a synchronized swimmer, you are flushing with a door handle, not even the toilet
right.
handle. You go ahead and turn on that light and the toast pops up. You know, you get to stay in the weird wacko place. If you are a dream teamer,
right.
If you are a member of the U.S. women's basketball team, I believe they got luxury cruise ship access
too. Oh, did they
yes,
too?
Yes.
Okay.
All I can tell you.
Couldn't they fit more athletes on there?
Well, here's the deal. It's like those Carnival cruises.
I've been on one.
Have you?
Yes.
Now, did you go on the one where, like, too many people eat too much bad shrimp and then the entire boat starts throwing up on each other?
I did not.
Okay, well, that happens on boats.
It does.
That happens on boats.
But not this boat.
Maybe.
It's parked. It's not moving. It's gorgeous.
It does look nice.
It's a luxury cruise liner. It's awesome.
It does look nice. Look, this is something that's actually done here in the city. When the conventions come into town that are so big, they'll park a cruise ship at one of the piers out here, and a company will rent the cruise ship to be a hotel because the hotels are sold out here in San Francisco.
That makes perfectly good sense.
Did you hear the story about Andrew Bogut?
Yes, I did.
Andrew,
I read that.
Andrew Bogut, he's staying in the Olympic Village. Australia is not putting their tiny kangaroo down sports into a luxury cruise liner. Andrew Bogut had to sew together his own shower curtain.
It's a pretty funny tweet.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The fact that he had a sewing kit handy.
Right?
That's what impressed me the most. You're a good packer.
You know what, though? That had to have been the team equipment manager.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, Dingo. Dingo, bring up the thread and needle. What'd you tear your uniform, Andrew? No, I need to knit a shower curtain.
So I don't fall.
So no one comes into the bathroom and sees my Dingo as I'm getting ready for the game.
And we were so worried about the Zika virus, which it's almost, I think it's shifting into winter now in Rio. So I don't think it's as much of an issue as they thought it would be. So
here's the one thing that I'm going to tell you right now. Zika virus to me sounds like avian bird flu. The next thing that is about to kill you in your nose, if you breathe it, never kills you. It's just, there's, oh, it's, remember SARS?
Yes.
SARS was going to kill us all.
I'm the one who freaks out over stuff like that.
SARS
so, yeah.
is going to kill. The fact that we are not all dead right now of Lyme disease lets us know that they were lying in 1993. In 1993, Lyme disease was going to kill me and every single one of my friends this summer, according to my mom. We were going to step on the tick that bit us without wearing shoes and all die of Lyme disease, which she thought like came with like a can of Sprite. The next thing that's about to kill you never is the thing that kills you next.
Right.
Zika. Zika sounds like the name of a stripper, a really exotic stripper.
The kind you find in Rio.
Doesn't sound like a virus to me. Sounds like a $20 lap dance. When we come on back, Jed York appeared on the Rich Eisen show. We haven't heard from Jed York in the big span of media in a long time, and we'll play some of that sound with courtesies to the Rich Eisen show, extended with all respect. A little from Jed coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So you know who also liked the Pittsburgh or the Jose Canseco interview? The Pittsburgh Diamonds. They said, big thanks to you, Damon. You have free lifetime tickets to the ball game.
Hey, that's cool.
I've never been a season ticket holder before, but now I am. I'm a Pittsburgh Diamonds season ticket holder.
Lifetime.
There you go.
We're going to a game.
Tell me all about it when you get back. No. That'd be fun. Sure, maybe. Thank you, though. Thank you very much. We're very, very happy that we got to talk to Jose Canseco today. I thought it was one of the more candid interviews we've done in a really, really long time. People dug it. And if you missed it, you can check it out on the podcast a little bit later on. We got some Jed York sound coming up. But first, Nick in San Francisco has picked the top five destinations in the world that the Olympics should consider as a permanent location. What's going on, Nick? What do you got?
My idea, and I've just been thinking about this, you know, for a while now, but wouldn't it be awesome if you could just make the games truly international? Don't pick one location where everything's going to be held, but rotate between the five best locations in the world for each particular sport. For instance, they're bringing surfing in 2020. So why wouldn't it be cool if, like, you know, one year all of the surfing was held in Maui, and then that same year all of the baseball was, like, held in the United States, and then the same year, like, the cycling was held in France. And then in four more years, do it again. You know, maybe surfing's in Indonesia, maybe baseball's in Latin America, or something along those lines. So whereas, I don't know what you do about the central opening game, but...
Right. That's the problem is that it would feel like you had... you know, a globe full of sporting events that were now unrelated to each other. You know, they like to put everything under that Olympic umbrella, and they love to do the big speech. You know, we call upon the world's athletes to join us in Rio de Janeiro in 2016. It makes a ton of sense, Nick. I agree with you. There's no way it ever happens because they do want to put it under one tent.
For sure.
Thank you, though, for the call. I really appreciate it. Great stuff. Little Jed York for you, all right? I got a little Jed York sound, but of course I lost the... Here it is. Thank you very much. Temporary studio coming through after all.
Making it work.
So Jed York was on the Rich Eisen show. Look, we haven't seen an awful lot of Jed in the public eye. And you know what? Congratulations, Jed York. That's the right move. If Jed agreed to come and do an interview on my show, the very first question I would have for him would be, why the hell are you still doing interviews? You know, it's time to just not talk. It's time for you to not be the face of the franchise. It's time to wear beige and blend and get a winning season before we hear from you again. The truth is, I actually like Jed. I like him as a guy. I just don't like him as an NFL owner. And he's put $1 billion on his team's bottom line. So as a businessman, there's no spots on him. But boy, what a different world we're living in now. And San Francisco as a city feels differently now that the Niners aren't here. There is a massive disconnect that I am completely convinced Jed York either ignored as a reality or wasn't concerned about in the first place between this city and that team now. And there's no doubt the losing and the frustration has played a part of that. If the Niners go 16-0 out of nowhere, they'll be popular again. Everyone loves to hop on a bandwagon. but it's a lot easier to drive the bandwagon through the town you're in than way the hell up the peninsula. Anyway, obviously, it was a nice conversation between Jed and Rich Eisen. It was not combative in any way, shape, or form until they started talking a little bit about how Jim Harbaugh is now at Eisen's alma mater, and they're taking on Michigan and Notre Dame are going to pick up their series again. But we'll get to that in a second. This is Jed York talking about the quarterback battle that's going on in Santa Clara right now.
From your point of view, do you have a favorite in your mind who you'd like to be the quarterback? Now, obviously, this is Chip's gig, and you hired him to make decisions like this. But in a position that you are in, do you harbor deep down who you'd like to see a quarterback?
I think the beautiful thing about football is your performance speaks for itself. And that's what Chip has said. That's what we believe is whoever the best players are, whatever position, that's who's going to be playing.
And in terms of Kaepernick, your relationship with him, he with the franchise, how would you characterize it?
We had a good conversation. I can't remember how long ago it was, probably a month and a half or so ago, you know, sort of right at the end of mini camp and before training camp, you know, before everybody left. And Cap and I have always had a good relationship. I mean, he's fully healthy now. He's ready to go, and he's ready to compete.
I guess how troubling or difficult was it for you knowing he's sitting in John Elway's house at some point reportedly talking about the possibility of leaving you and joining him? What was that moment like for you, Jed?
I mean, it's better than talking to anybody in Seattle.
I like it. Okay.
It's a good radio laugh. That's a good radio laugh, Rich Eisen. Here, pause this down because we got to get to a couple of others here real quick, Elena. We don't have time to dive too much into one answer here because we're running up the top of the hour. But look, I mean, that was a good little retort, better than him going up to Seattle. But look, this team pushed him out. This team pushes people away. It's pushed away veteran players. It's pushed away young players. It's pushed away rugby players. It's pushed away quarterbacks. It's pushed away successful head coaches. The Niners rub their own people the wrong way, and we've seen that. And that is what people said Chip Kelly kind of did in Philadelphia, rubbed people a little bit the wrong way. Here is Jed York on the expectations for Chip in year one.
3 years in a row now with a different coach for you in a franchise that usually doesn't do something like that. So what in general is just your hopes for 2016 that you're hoping to see out of Chip Kelly in year one? Jed.
I mean, I think Chip's philosophy is the right philosophy when you look at win the day. And I think that's similar to what we've always looked at here with coaches that have been successful. When you get better each day, you tend to be pretty happy when the season is all said and done. What I see with our team, we're a young team. I think we're the second or third youngest roster in the NFL. You know, we have a new coaching staff for us, but a coaching staff that's worked together for the most part. And I think it's an innovative coaching staff. We have the opportunity to build something special with a good core group of young players. You know, some guys, whether it's Staley, Bowman, you know, guys like that that have been here for a while that bring something to the game that are a little bit more mature, a little bit more veteran. I think we have a chance to, you know, outperform what anybody thinks that we can do this year. But more than anything, we have the chance to build something special that will last for a long time.
It's easy to say we think we can outperform what people think when no one thinks you're going to win more than 3 games, 4 games, 5 games. So that's the first we've heard from Jed in a long time. Thanks again to the Rich Eisen Show for the sound. We have to take a real quick break when we come on back. Susan Slusser, ready to talk a little A's, Angels, deadline deals, and more. That's next as we walk you right up to the A's dugout show coming up with Chris Townsend at 6:15. Here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Well, it's our final segment this afternoon with A's baseball just around the corner. The Dugout Show, Chris Townsend, as Gianna said, coming up in just a matter of moments. We got Susan Slusser joining us here in just a minute. Let me know when we have her as we come to you from the temporary studio. We have Susan. Phenomenal. Wonderful. Wunderbar, if you don't mind me saying. We got Kendall Graveman against Jared Weaver tonight. We have a deadline that came and went and plenty to talk about. Susan, how are you? And how much does the club feel different without Reddick setting the tone in that locker room? Or I guess I should call it a clubhouse to be appropriate.
Yes, thank you for using correct terminology. There's no doubt it's a little subdued. It certainly was yesterday. You know, that's to be expected. This is a team that lost not just, you know, one of its longest serving and best players, but also best starting pitcher. So there's always an idea that it's coming this time of year when the A's fall out of contention. And really, from a business standpoint, it makes sense. But I don't think it makes it any easier from guys that aren't just friends with Reddick and Hill, but rely on them a lot, too.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a different team without Reddick there. It's amazing, though. Everyone, if you got traded, if you made headlines at the deadline, you took an over last night. Did you see? Like everyone who got traded took a combined 0-for-18 at the plate last night, Reddick included. I didn't think Rich Hill's blister was going to prevent him from being traded. He had "trade me" written all over him.
Track record before that was too good to ignore.
Right. I did think that Sonny might have been included. How surprised are you that he wasn't?
Sonny? I never thought Sonny was going anywhere. I think we've discussed this, Damon. The A's are not going to sell him when he's at absolute lowest trade value ever. There's just no way.
I still thought that they were going to tear this thing down. And I'm surprised that they actually didn't deal more from their bullpen and maybe even a few other positions. I know we talked to David Weekly, and he always says he likes to keep one foot in the we might be able to do something and not do the full strip it down to the studs like the way the Houston Astros did. But I thought that might have been coming this year.
Yeah, you know, I do think that had the opportunity presented itself to move some of their other veteran guys, say, you know, Coco Crisp, Jed Lowry, Danny Valencia, I think they certainly would have looked at those. I don't think those offers were forthcoming, but I do think those are guys that could go in waiver deals, so there wasn't necessarily an urgency to do that. I can almost guarantee you that there will be some more deals this coming month with some of those guys, and it would make a lot of sense, too. Those are three guys who are reliable hitters, and if a contender has a player go down or just needs like a solid pinch hitter, Coco Crisp's track record as a pinch hitter is phenomenal, and he's a switch hitter, and he's leading the majors in hitting with runners in scoring position. So, to me, that's a no-brainer if you're a contending team.
Indeed. Susan Slusser is here. A's and Angels coming up tonight. Kendall Graveman, who now is this team's wins leader since Rich Hill was traded. He's got 7 on the season, but it sounds better than that when you look at what he's done over his last starts, where he's picked up 6 of those over his last 10 starts. He is getting better. We're always going to measure Josh Donaldson against him directly, which is probably unfair for all involved. But this might be – how about this? If you need an A to root for, you better start rooting for Kendall Graveman, because this guy's got to make it work.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. You're right. It's a lot to put on him. Yay, you're the guy they got for Josh Donaldson. But he has been better. He's turned it around. The sinker is phenomenal. I mean, we've said all along, the stuff is great. What he's managed to do is, you know, he's hitting his locations with better regularity. He's pitching smarter. He's kind of almost simplified things, which I think makes him a better pitcher. But doesn't always mean that for everybody, but for in his case, I think it does. And he's starting to eliminate the big bad innings. He's doing what Sonny Gray is not doing this year.
Yeah, that is, and Sonny needs to start doing that again. I mean, come on, that's what we're paying to see here, Sonny. Hopefully it will happen again. Susan, this is a team that, you know, I think we all know is already looking ahead to next year. As you look ahead to next year, beyond Kendall Graveman, Manaea, the obvious, is there anyone besides Sonny Gray who might be untouchable? Is there a guy that if you had to buy basement-priced stock in right now that was on the team that you think 3-4 years from now will really be here making a big difference? Who is that guy?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that anybody that's sort of 23, 24 or younger is probably not untouchable, certainly. I mean, you know, I think Marcus Semien is here to stay, but that doesn't mean that if they've got a great offer that they wouldn't move him. But, you know, Ryan Healy, guys like that, that probably teams aren't coming after anyway, but I look like they have really bright futures. Those guys aren't going anywhere. Those are the guys they're trying to get in deals. So anyone like that is safe, but, you know, anybody else is totally, you know, on the board. Sean Doolittle, anybody in the bullpen, I think anybody can go. Not Randall. He's the kind of guy they're trying to get. But the rest of them all, yeah, for sure. What I think is going to be more interesting is, do they at some point go back to starting to give some more long-term deals? You know, they did with Doolittle. That was the last one they've done. Sonny, I think, you know, for a lot of reasons, they couldn't get anything done. It would have been a lot of money, and pitchers certainly are an injury risk. I'd like to see them do something like that, though, with Semien or maybe some of the other young position players.
I'm surprised Valencia also wasn't moved. The stuff that I've heard from David on and off the record, the stuff that I've read in your stories and in between the lines of your story, Susan, really suggested he might be out. Why is he still in?
They're definitely not thinking of him as a guy they're building around, certainly. That's maybe the nice way to put it. So there was no interest in him. You know, you can't trade a guy when there's no interest. There's a reason that he's been traded so many times. People see him now as a potential clubhouse distraction. And, you know, he's not always had the best reputation anywhere he's gone. Now, he has handled this reduction in playing time in Oakland really, really well. He's been very mature about it, said all the right things, done all the right things. But to me, it's pretty eye-popping when you've got a guy who was your cleanup hitter almost all year, and then they trade Josh Reddick, and Valencia is still not – he can play right field. I mean, he's a perfectly adequate right fielder. He is not playing right field every day.
Yeah.
He is going to platoon. And that, to me, tells you all you need to know right there.
It certainly does. Knowing what I know about the team, knowing about how precious the time we have together is, should I ever waste a single breath, Susan, with you, asking you a single Yasiel Puig A's question?
I mean, you can ask me, but yeah, he was not a guy who they were ever thinking about. He just doesn't fit their MO. You know what? In a year they were contending, I think he's a guy maybe that might have piqued their interest, but not in a year where they're rebuilding and they're basing things around a bunch of kids. You know, they just dealt a guy who's about as great a role model as you can get for a bunch of young ball players. I don't think they would want to bring in somebody who's seen as A, a headache, and B, not always a guy that hustles, not always a guy who plays, you know, the game sort of quote-unquote the right way. That's just not I can't imagine them wanting to deal with someone like that right now, period.
I will never waste your precious time with a Puig question again. You sold me. Thank you very much, Susan. Good to talk to you.
All right, thanks.
The Susan Slusser Report, sponsored by Dolan's Lumber, Doors and Windows, just like Gianna's house. find lower prices, better service at a higher quality at Dolan's. Hey, thanks very, very much to everybody who got us up and on the air. All of our engineers who did a really good job with this temporary studio, which went glitch-free today.
I know. Knock on wood.
A glitch-free broadcast in a temporary studio. You can't ask for more than that. Thanks very much to Alex Pavlovich, Jose Canseco, Ted Robinson, Susan for joining us. Thank you, Gianna. Thanks to everyone. Bouton Vixon. Who I didn't even get to see yet today.
Gotta go say hi.
I gotta go say hi. Hi. thank you very much to Danny. Thank you very much to Connor. Our executive producer, Alex from Redwood City this afternoon. Wonderful job. Thank you very much. Elon in the house. And that's all we got. Chris Townsend coming up next. In the meantime, remember, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.